We just gonna get right to it. This is James Motivates on the hashtag for the culture podcast. Thank you for tuning in. You can listen on all platforms: Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio. We on 10 platforms right now. But let's get to it. I'm not even gonna do the intro because I'm too hype about this. I just watched episodes 3 and 4 of The Last Dance, and I gotta give my response. Because, and this is hard for me to admit, I'm a millennial, right? So that automatically makes me a LeBron guy. If you a millennial and you not a LeBron guy, you're just fooling yourself. Because it's, let me stop right there. Unless you're from the Chicago Midwest area where Jordan was really doing his thing, so you was hearing the stories coming up because your parents or your brother or your sister probably had that Jordan paraphernalia in the crib and they was really Jordan fans. Not the fake, oh, I'm from Queens and I love Jordan. Yeah, I hear you, but it was different being in it. It was different when Jordan was in that city. So unless you're one of those people and you grew up hearing the Jordan stories, then, and you a millennial, I can respect that. But outside of that, millennials, we just gotta admit we don't know, or we didn't know much about MJ. I mean, the aura's still here. We hear stories about it here and there, but when you hear from the people that was actually in it, it's a different perspective. If you was in that city of Chicago from the time Jordan got drafted until the time he left, your perspective on who he was and the impact that he had is just a little different. That's all. No knock. No better, no worse, just different. But for me as a millennial, watching this, it gives me a whole different perspective on just who this man was as an athlete. And when people say he's the GOAT, is how can you really refute that? And again, I'm telling you, like, if you would have asked me who was the greatest basketball player of all time 2 months ago, Bron. Let's just go to the numbers, because it's not all about championships. That's the first thing people who support Jordan say. It's look how many rings he got. And my argument would be, let's look at the stats. But numbers don't tell the whole story. Numbers don't tell the whole story. And this is how we're going to have to advocate for LeBron when the next great player comes around. I don't know when that'll be. But when LeBron is retired and his cement is dry, his legacy is complete, and that next generational talent comes in, or might already be here in Zion Williamson, we're gonna have to be doing the same type of defense. Like, we lived the LeBron era. We remember when he was drafted in 03. And I'm talking to the millennials right here. We know what that feeling was like. We had those debates when we was kids about who was better, Melo versus LeBron. Because those were the top two talents, or top two talked about talents coming in that 03 draft. We was there for those. These kids, Generation Z, the ones that are coming after us, they wasn't there for those. They was there for the tail end, like when LeBron got the ring in Cleveland. Some of them might have been watching basketball, especially now with the LA, LeBron's last stop in LA. This is where that generation is really seeing LeBron flourish. But for a lot of them, they wasn't there for the first Cleveland days. They heard about the Miami days. They wasn't outside for that. They was doing homework, having to rush home after school, get their homework done, take the meat out the deep freezer before mom and dad came home. It's just a different experience. And now, after watching this Jordan doc, and this is episode 3 and 4. So much of the story that's left to be told. But if you haven't been watching The Last Dance on ESPN, make sure you tune into those. If you haven't watched it now, I'm not here to give you the scoop on what happened. I'm just here giving my reaction. If you don't want any spoilers, cut me off right now. Thanks for the view and thanks for the time. but we 5 minutes in, we got to get into it. You can cut me off, go watch it, and then come back and listen to this. But I just have some general reactions, and I want to get into them. Rodman, his impact on the game isn't really told when you hear about the story of Jordan. It's usually Jordan and Pippen, Pippen and Jordan, Jordan and Phil, Phil and Jordan, triangle offense, triangle offense. But Rodman was such a pivotal impact for you to be able to have or average 17 rebounds. For you to actually have a game where you have 0 points and 20 rebounds means that you zoned in so much on your role as a teammate that you was willing to sacrifice everything else to do your job. And this is something that I hope a lot of kids that were watching this that are now coming up in the basketball world really understand, is that basketball is more than just points. There are so many other ways that you can impact the game. Scoring is one of them, but most people aren't going to be the highest scorer on their team. That's just the way basketball works. Everybody, it's a team game. Everybody has a role. But basketball is also so simple that it makes everybody think that they know what they're doing. See, football is different because you can watch football and you know you don't know what's going on. But basketball is such a simple sport because there's only five people on a team. The goal is to get the ball in the hoop and stop the other team from scoring in the simplest form. So anybody could comprehend that. Therefore, everybody has an opinion. But when you get into the intricacies of basketball, the angles, the rebounding, the hustling, the pick and roll, there's so many other things. Like, it's deeper than just scoring the basketball. Rodman understood that. He took that to the next level. It was a point in the doc where he was breaking down how he was actually grabbing rebounds. Oh, if MJ's on this side of the court, I know that the ball's going to circulate in this way. It's going to go off the rim this way. I got to be at this spot to have a best chance for a rebound. I've never heard anybody, I'm not going to say we, I've never heard anybody break down the science of a rebound in that way. Not saying it's never been done, I just never heard it. And I'm glad that the documentary highlighted that, because I think that we need to talk about that more. When we're teaching these kids, is that there's so many ways to impact the game that you don't have to be the top scorer. Mind you, he was averaging 20-something and like 13 in college. So he could put the ball in the hoop. But it's like, why would I do that when I already have somebody who's averaging 35 points a game? He don't need me to do that. And so we saw Pippen got hurt, and he had to, Rodman had to come up to the number two spot. But before that, his role, yo, grab the rebounds, give me the ball. We out. And I just, like, man, that was just such a great, great breakdown. And I love that they played that, because it shows that the role player is just as important as the star. Everybody matters who's on that team. If you do your job, the team is better. And I love how they showed that transition between Doug Collins and Phil Jackson, because that made a huge difference. Michael didn't want the ball out of his hands. Remember, he was averaging like 35 a game. But Phil said, if you want to be a champion, you got to trust your teammates. You got to trust your teammates. And Jordan did that to the T. He followed the system, went into the triangle offense. He was still putting up numbers. He was getting his, but Jordan probably could have averaged 38 if he really wanted to. He probably wouldn't have had six championships. But remember, in the documentary, it talked about he was known as being a scoring champion. Magic Johnson even said it. Oh, he's winning scoring champs, but he don't got no rings. Until Jordan proved that theory wrong, got to the championship and won his first ring against Magic. The physicality of the 80s and 90s was different. We know that. If you know basketball, you know that. But to see it, it's different. Like, people would tell you in the barbershops, Jordan was getting beat up. Jordan had to go through this. LeBron would never survive in this era. You guys are, the guys in today's era is just different. The 80s and 90s was a street fight, was a dog fight every day. Oh yeah, you definitely had to be ready to throw them things. You didn't leave the hood when you got to the NBA. Oh no. Once you get past those dotted lines, once you get past that semicircle, oh, you're going to catch an elbow. You might get these hands to the back. And you're going to have to get up. And if you don't defend yourself, you're going to do it again and again and again. It was a 24/7 male ego check in the NBA. If you didn't have the heart to stand on your 10 toes and defend yourself, they was going to beat the brakes off you. It was a different mentality, and it was fine. I mean, I think it hurt the development of the NBA, but Jordan still took it to a global level, but they had to change it. They had to change how the game looked. It looked too scrappy. They didn't want to present that to the world. The same way now, like, a couple of other American sports just aren't like that to be presented to the world. Like, if you look at hockey's not a global sport. You look at what's another sport? Football, NFL, American football is not really a globalized sport. So the NBA had to kind of clean it up, for lack of better words, to get it to where it wanted to be, and Jordan did that. The next thing that stood out to me was the mental toughness of Jordan to be able to turn it on and turn it off whenever he felt like it. That first game that his coach Doug Collins had, when they were in the Garden, and they thought that they were about to lose, and Doug Collins did not want to lose, and I hope I'm saying his name correctly, but Doug Collins did not want to lose his first game as a coach. He wanted to start off on the right foot. MJ saw that he was down heading into the fourth. He said, "Yo, listen, I got you. Don't worry about it." I forgot how many points they were down in the fourth quarter, but he turned it on like I've never seen. He said, "Give me the ball. Move out the damn way. I got this. I'm going to put the team on my back tonight. This is the Garden. This is the Mecca of basketball. I understand all of that, but we not about to lose for our new coach. I actually like this guy." And he ended up winning that game. And it just goes to show, like, how great of a player he was, how skillful he was, yes. But to be able to turn it on and turn it off like that is just different. And a lot of NBA players have that today. Like, they'll be able to play, you know, play around the first three quarters, shoot a couple of shots, make sure their team isn't getting blown out. But when that fourth quarter turn on, the different animal comes out. That will to win that I've never really seen before or understood about Jordan until I watched this documentary, was that when it was time to turn on, you didn't want to be on the basketball court with him. Like, it's different. It was almost like when people was on the floor with Jordan, they knew that Jordan was better than them. And Jordan knew that he was better than them. And they couldn't do anything to stop him. And Jordan knew they couldn't do anything to stop him. So I'm going to just do whatever I want to do. And Jordan took that and he ran with it. I also liked, man, the five-game playoff series. I think this was when Jordan hit that first game winner against Cleveland when the mantra was that the Bulls always give up leads and everybody thought that Cleveland was going to beat the Bulls. I think that was 88. Or no, that had to be before that. Yeah, it was before that. Whenever he hit that buzzer beater against Cleveland, the five-game playoff series, I really want to talk about this because this might be something that we can go back to. Business-wise, it makes sense to just keep it the way it is. Seven games, more games for people, more paychecks in people's pockets, better for TV, but the competition seemed like it was, the competition seemed like it was so much better with the five-game series, because if you're going into a series and you know it's best out of five, that game one actually means a lot. There's no feel them out process. You got to win game one to set the tone. And what I saw in the 90s, at least, not saying that the early rounds aren't competitive today, that's not what I'm trying to insinuate, but just thinking about it logically, the five-game series makes it more competitive. But then also on the flip side, it can be more competitive, but then teams can also be more lucky. Because for you to knock somebody out in five games, you may not be the better team. That's one argument you can make. I disagree with it, but one person could say that. Like, oh, a team got lucky. This is why we need seven-game series for all the rounds, because we don't want a team to get lucky. We really want the best team to win. And this is why the NBA playoffs are so great, but then also at the same time, it's predictable, because you don't really get a lot of upsets. You don't get a lot of the Mavericks beating the one seed. The Warriors beating the one seed with the We Believe team with B. Diddy and Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes and Andre Karolinko, like them boys, the Rough Riders. You don't really get series like that when they could get those upsets. But with a five-game series, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know. I wasn't really there in the 90s like that, like I said before. I wasn't really watching basketball like that. But correct me if I'm wrong, I think it makes it a little more suspenseful. It makes you think like, oh, if we really steal a game, if we really steal game one and we're the underdogs, we could win this thing. But that's just my take. I don't know. I would love to see the five-game series in today's NBA, just to see if it would make it more competitive, just to see if it would also make it more suspenseful. Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? But going back to Dennis Rodman, I see that they showed a glimpse of him before. I think this was before he got to the Bulls, when he was in Detroit, with the way the team that drafted him. He almost committed suicide. And I'm glad that they showed that, because it goes to show you that rich does not come with happiness. You was making all this money in the NBA, and I don't know if he was on his rookie deal, but whatever. You were making more than the average American at the time. And you are still struggling with yourself. Rich does not mean happiness. Those are two completely different entities. Just because you have a lot of money, that does not mean you're gonna feel accepted. But for a lot of us, growing up in poverty, that's what we believe, and rightfully so, because you deal with not having for so long that you think that, we think that, as soon as you run into some money, that's going to solve all your problems. And Biggie said it best, more money, more problems, and it makes sense. And we still see that to this day. People who come from the slums, people who come from the projects run into some money, and then it actually hurts them. If you're not comfortable with yourself, if you feel like you can't express who you truly are, if you feel like you have to hide who you are on the inside, if you feel like you cannot have a conversation about somebody, about your true intentions and be who you really want to be, and you have to continue to hide in the shell, it's dreadful. It can be toxic. You're literally hurting yourself when that happens. And that's why I was so happy to see that he was able to be himself in Chicago. Because remember, that was not safe in the 90s to be who Dennis Rodman wanted to be, to just be himself, to be different. There was a certain code of ethics of what quote unquote manhood is. And I know his had to be questioned with some of the things he was doing, but he still did it. And that's one thing I respect about Phil Jackson, was allowing him to be who he wanted to be. The Pistons, man. The bad boy Pistons. The bad boy Pistons. The bad boy Pistons are a really interesting team because they won two championships back to back. They had the league on lock for those 2 years, and nobody cares. And this is one lesson that I want to leave. History is told by the winner's perspective. If you want your story to be told, you have to win. Isaiah Thomas won, but he didn't win enough for his story to be the driving perspective. Jordan won 6 championships. So now we gotta hear about the 90s through his perspective. We don't care about anybody else's. We don't care about Larry Bird's perspective, even though he was there before Jordan. We don't care about Magic's perspective, even though he was like, they were kind of an overlap towards in the beginning of Jordan's career. But when you look at the people who played with Jordan, Ewing, Barkley, Isaiah Thomas, Karl Malone, John Stockton, all these players, we don't care about their perspective because you didn't win. You did not win enough for your perspective to be the driving perspective of 90s basketball. Now, I have to figure out how I can apply that same mindset to my life. Because if I don't win, my perspective will not be the driving perspective. It'll be somebody else's. And to compare that to today's basketball, what does that mean for the best player of our generation? Is his perspective going to be the driver perspective if Kevin Durant gets 2 more rings? What if Kawhi ends with 6? I don't know. I think it's worth the conversation. But who's going to be the driving perspective of our era? Right now, it's up for debate. LeBron got 3 rings, but it's a couple people on that ass. Kawhi's on that ass. KD's on that ass. Steph is here. I don't know, man. I think it makes an interesting conversation. Who's going to be the driving force, or who's going to be the driving perspective of 2010 basketball? Because I think that's when LeBron reached his apex, was in the 2010s. Who's going to be the driving force behind that? I don't know. Will IT and Jordan ever figure it out? I doubt it. It seems like Jordan really hated him. Still hates him. He's not going to get over what he did. But now that just shows when you the sheriff, if somebody disrespects the game, you exile them forever. Jordan made it clear. If you disrespect the game while I'm here, I'm going to make your life hell. And remember, when the Bulls finally got through the Pistons, Isaiah Thomas never won again. Never. And the Pistons had their number for 2 years prior to the Bulls beating them. 2 or 3 years. I'm not really too sure. 2 or 3 years, something like that. They beat them. They kept beating the Bulls, and beating them bad, like pushing them to the ground, pushing them into the stands, throwing elbows, fouling them, hurting them, trying to just do whatever they can to Michael Jordan. And you know what he did? Say, yo, I'm gonna hit the gym. I'm gonna hit the weight room. I'm gonna put on muscle. And Jordan did that. Going back to that winner's mentality, that mindset, that mantra that nobody can stop me from doing what I want to do. And once Jordan had the body to take those blows and now deliver punishment to the Pistons, and he got Isaiah Thomas and them all the way out of here, and Isaiah Thomas and Bill Laimbeer and the rest of the Pistons got up and didn't even shake their hands, you just acknowledged how Jordan had to come back and get better. You were the bullies. And now that when the bully gets checked, you got nothing to say? from their perspective, I understand that. Because when you bullying people like that, you're not going to want to shake nobody's hand. If you're the big brother and you beating down the little brother and the little brother finally get a lick on you, you're not about to shake his hand. So I understand that mindset. But you're not the sheriff of the NBA. So you don't call the shots and determine what's going to go down in this league. It was Jordan once he got through them. And that's one thing I loved about it was that Jordan made it clear, you're not going to disrespect the, you're not going to disrespect me first, but you're also not going to disrespect the game. And after that, he made Isaiah Thomas' life hell. The Pistons never won again. Isaiah Thomas never won again. I think after that, Jordan even got him, cut him from the Dream Team. I don't think Isaiah Thomas didn't even play in the Olympics because Mike was like, nah, I don't want him. That's how much power he had. The NBA was under his thumb. And he made sure if you disrespected the game, you out of here. And I got to respect that. And I want to end with this. One thing I do admire about this documentary is that it's showing how the best of the best collided in the playoffs and even in the championships. We saw the heavyweights go at it. Even though Jordan was always winning and he never saw a game seven, he had to get through the Celtics. He had to get through the Pistons. He had to get through the Lakers. These is heavy hitters. This is Bird versus Jordan, Magic versus Jordan, Jordan versus the Bad Boy Pistons. And the Pistons and the Bulls were a real rivalry to the point where these guys hated each other. They wasn't going to send each other Christmas cards on Christmas or birthday cakes on their birthdays. They ain't like each other at all. They walking past each other in the hallway. They ain't dapping each other up. It was a different type of rivalry. Did we really have a clash of our stars like this in the finals or even in the road to the playoffs? Like, I think about the two biggest names of our generation, Kobe Bryant, rest in peace, and LeBron James. We never really got to see them go at it. And I think that's one thing that our generation was deprived of. We never really saw them go toe to toe and fight for that crown. Part of that because the Spurs were that great and nobody really cared to watch the Spurs. Tim Duncan was that great and nobody really cared to watch him. He has 5 championships and he took a couple from LeBron and Kobe to in the 2010s. But because of that, we never saw, they always missed each other. And that's one thing I always wanted to see. And I wish that our generation could have had. Because those Kobe versus LeBron debates, which is different back then. And we never got to see that. But I'm glad that the 90s did. The 90s definitely appreciated seeing their heavyweights go head-to-head in the playoffs. But I feel like ours never really had that chance. That's just my opinion. You could prove me wrong. That's fine. DM me. Let me know. Like, yo, you don't know what you're talking about. This and this happened. I'm just going based off of my memory right now. And y'all already know my memory is a little shaky. So please bear with me. But that's all I got for y'all today. That was my take on The Last Dance, episodes 3 and 4. And I hope you enjoyed it. If you appreciated this, like, comment, and share. Let me know what you think. This is James Motivates, hashtag for the culture. Appreciate you tuning in.